Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right there.
I just find it interesting that everyone remembers Lata Henta, but I think it's the worst one. Like, I've now read about 10 of his works, and it's the one I don't like, but it's longer than all the others put together. And he just wants to do this big, big work, and it was not as good, his best one. But anyway, the next book.
I feel like people really they seem to really be amazed by the fact that someone can write 900 pages, even though there's been plenty of books since. It seems like if it's a classical work, or if it's older than 100 years and has 900 pages, it's got to be studied in school.
Yeah. Hold on, PJ. I think the phone's ringing. I think we've got a call coming in. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, hello. Hi. You've got Dina and PJ on the line. Do you want to introduce yourself to the list?
My name is Ellen Nichols, and my book's called Remember Whose Little Girl You Are.
There it is on camera. If you can see, Remember Whose Little Girl You Are. And yeah, this was a fun read, and I must say it was a quick one. So, you know, just over 100 pages. So I sat down and read it in maybe a day, just a day and a little bit. I really enjoyed it. I want to ask you before I say anything about it, because it's a memoir, right? Is this, you know, strictly fact, or is there any like fictionalized stuff added in?
No, it's as I remember it exactly.
Right.
And the people that said all the things that upset me.
There's some bad people. Yeah. So what made you want to write a memoir? I mean, I understand because there's interesting stuff in it, but I mean, what was your idea that said, I want to write this?
What happened was that I grew up down here where I am now in the South, in small town Alabama and Pensacola, Florida. And then I was going to go to graduate school, and I thought, I'll do something exciting and go somewhere different. My mother was from Toronto, so I went to the University of Toronto to graduate school and stayed 50 years.
Oh, wow. 50 years. Wow, goodness.
And my son now teaches at the University of Toronto.
Wow. But you did eventually move back.
So eventually I did, back in 2000. Sorry, I'm having a problem with my voice, so it sounds croaky, but
it'll be a
bit better. And so I moved back down here in 2014 because one of those boys from high school lured me back down to marry him.
All right.
So we got married in 2015, and we're still here. And missed my son and his family by a day. They were just here for a week on a vacation.
Lovely.
And my two granddaughters go to the university, and where my son teaches, where I went, it's a family thing.
Well, that's a lovely ending. Dean was telling me some very depressing stories by a Spanish author. So I'd like to hear that real life is also ends well. So lovely.
Ellen, your story ended well, but there's some bumps along the way if we take it from the book.
Oh yeah.
You talk about it's some stuff about your life. Obviously, there's a part of it where you do list a lot of different guys, but it's not just that, you know. But which is your own biggest takeaway from it? You know, of the different guys, and we have Virgil, we have all these different guys, which is the one that you think is the most, not the best or the worst, but the most powerful to read in the book?
Probably the one I remember best and fondest, and unfortunately he passed away about 3 years ago, was Steve Young. Mm-hmm. The one who wrote A Seven Bridges Road about where we used to go park. We kept in touch over the years, and he never forgave me for leaving and going to Canada.
Oh.
I was the one that went on down that highway first.
So, because it's interesting, in the end, we hear about a lot of guys from Alabama. You move off to Canada, so it's kind of like, okay, doors closed. But no, because you just revealed that in the end, one of them lured you back. So I guess it was always possible, you know?
He and I knew each other in junior high and high school.
Wow.
So we've known each other since we were 13.
Also, so
he liked younger girls. I liked older boys. We never went out together until, boom, we connected on a friend's Facebook after all those years.
Wow.
So I like the fact that that's what the book is about. So it kind of ends there. And I like that. Okay.
Tell me a little bit about, because PJ, what you maybe don't know is we also have this setting of growing up in Alabama. You're the daughter of a preacher. We have there's some racism, obviously, within the society at that time, which it seems like you never really got. You know, like why have we got separate, you know, windows to go and get served at and all this kind of stuff? So there's a little bit of it that is your battle with society as well as some boys that you met, you know?
Yeah, I fought it. I fought that racist thing all my life. And even in Canada, I used to give the woman, I used to be in charge of fundraising for the YWCA of Greater Toronto. And I would work late every night. And the woman in charge of the cleaning staff who owned it would get a ride with me every night. I'd give her a ride. And she told me that she was Black from the West Indies, and she had encountered racism because of her skin color, even in beautiful, wonderful, sweet Canada.
Wow.
So I don't know why that is.
That's interesting, because we don't get that image of Canada at all.
Yeah. Right?
No, and I was shocked when she told me, because I had never encountered that. But of course, look at me. And I didn't have to worry about that.
Tell me a little bit about how it felt, because there's a little theme in the book as well, growing up the daughter of a preacher, you know, you kind of have this goody two shoes idea, like, you know, Miss Prissy, you little Miss Prissy, you call yourself at one point, like that's how people maybe perceived you. You're not going to want to get in on the fun kind of thing. But you did, you were quite wild. You did want to get in on the fun.
I spent my time trying to get rid of that image. But the irony is, when I got to Canada, I worked for 4 years. I had this wonderful job working for Norman Jewison, the film director, and helping him get his film school started. Everybody in that school thought I was a square, and you could tell I'd walk into a room and everybody would suddenly lower their voice.
Oh, really?
And you have to tell them, no, I was the one that ran down the street naked when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah, exactly, right. I would tell you a good story about that, but I don't know if I can say the word on.
Oh, can you self censor? Can you don't swear?
Yeah, okay.
But
what it was is for one of the students who especially thought I was a square, I made for Christmas we all drew each other's names. I drew his name. I made him a gift certificate. It said, to Jim Gerard, that was his name. One, and then I had a big lip print.
Oh.
And across the top it said, fa la 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 la, fallatio.
Oh, goodness.
Sorry, I was just singing a song.
Wow, just a song.
And so when I did that, everybody went, whoa.
So yeah, I didn't think I was British, but maybe I'm a prudish little British boy, because there was some bits in this where I thought, oh, like you talk about parking, you know, and going with the boys in the cars and kissing and things, and I thought, oh, but they're young, like they're teenagers. Oh goodness, you know?
No, that was in college. I was
right. That was a little bit older.
Early
then.
20s.
Okay, that's not so bad.
But I like the fact that you're showing a. What some people would say a vulnerable part of your life, but it isn't. It's just natural, isn't it? So you're just showing yourself who you are. So I found that very brave and necessary. We need
That's
more books.
Who I really was. My sisters were not like me. They were proper and wonderful and good church people. I was too. I ended up being a church organist as a career part.
Yeah.
Great. And then flipped that over and started raising money.
And you liked Bad Boys. Like, some of the boys were, Virgil's the one that I always remember. I don't know, he's one of the earlier ones in the book, but he turned out very bad. And there's the story about you guys being quite young and doing a kind of, let's have a look at each other and see what the differences are, you know.
People
but then
used to call it playing doctor.
Playing doctor, yeah. But then, of course, he sounds like he grew up to be rather an unpleasant chap altogether. So that's, you know, you never know when you're young how people are going to turn out, you know.
Yeah, he was the one that we went out. We found that bag of money in my dad's. I told him about it.
Yes.
He wanted to go to the store with it. We went out and started giving it out.
All the money out to the neighbors.
So one of the mothers called my mother, and she came running along and collected it all.
It was like the church collection money, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
my favorite bit, just on the church collection theme, my favorite line from the whole book is the bit where you've got coins in your pocket, and your mom says, "Where'd you get these coins?" He's like, "Well, I went to the church, and they passed around a plate with some money, so I took some." Like, of course, you know, they were just passing it out to everyone, you know?
You know, what is really weird is, I don't know if I heard it told so many times, but I remember it. I remember I came back with the extra money and my mom questioned it. And I said, well, I took, you know, they were giving it out.
But much of this is your own, obviously it's all your own memory, but I mean, are some of those early bits stuff that your mom or your family told to you and reminded you of?
The one where our car stopped on the railroad track.
Yeah.
I don't remember that one, but I heard about it.
That's just family story.
It became, it kind of became a memory in both, like, oh, it's a story. That's nice. Okay.
And well, one that was, sad for me, this little moment that I thought was powerful, you mentioned one relationship with, I think it was, you had been writing letters. You call him cuckolded by mail. You know, you had been writing letters. To someone else, and you seem to be kind of very jealous or whatever, but there's a sad kind of moment where when you finally get the divorce, he keeps the letters that you know, you'd written to someone else, and he says, well, they were beautifully written, and you never wrote anything that beautiful to me, so I just kept them anyway. That one almost made me cry. That was very sad, and I didn't want to take a side or something. I felt sad for everyone in that, you know?
I know. He'll be in the next book.
Okay, because so there'll be more.
I'm already writing Northern Men, you know, about the Northern guys.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. Are we going to expect the sequel? Good.
That's great.
And the one that I've kept in touch with, too, you would love, because are you folks in Britain?
We're both in, PJ at the moment is actually in Germany, but I'm in UK, yeah.
Okay, yeah. The one of the guys that wrote a blurb of an endorsement, the one named Robert Griffiths.
Yeah.
He was from Ripon. He was born in Stoke-on-Trent. And I met him in college. And he and I still stay in touch.
Good. Wow. So you're good at keeping in touch with people when they're worth keeping in touch with, I guess.
He and I lost touch for many years. And then when my mother died and I was going through her little address book, telling people she had died, I discovered his name. My mom kept in touch with him all those years.
Wow. That's unusual for your mom to keep in touch with him. Wow.
She just loved him so much. She found him fascinating and interesting. Well, read his endorsement and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I love the book, and I hope that we get that next one sooner rather than later. Do you want to plug it? Where can they find it? Do you want to plug your website or social media?
Amazon. You can go to my website, ellennichols.com. You can order the book from four different places.
Cool. I'll put a link anyway. I'll put a link in the show notes, and then they can get that.
The English guy now lives in France. He taught it in Grenoble for many years.
Nice.
And you ordered it from
from Amazon, maybe online. Yeah.
What was the name Amazon was called? Well, just go and look at all the four independent books or something.
No matter where you are, I guess you can get your hands on it, which is good to know. Yeah. I'm gonna ask you one.
Remember my name.
Do you want to ask anything, PJ, before I do the final question?
Yes, I just wanted to ask, no, I just wanted to say and encourage you with that. I think women need this more. Well, I'm just talking because about women, because you are a woman. And I think that modern women still are confused about these things. So it's we like to think we live in a modernized world, but sometimes I just encounter people, women and men, who are still very naive and maybe feel that they are strange. So talking about sexual topics, for example, or just or divorce or any kind of things that are slightly even taboo is very necessary. Mm. So I think it's writing about this and that you're writing a sequel because you're definitely helping people out there. So I think it's great that you're
yeah. doing this. And you're very, very open in the book, which I think is good, you know.
I like that, yeah.
Can I tell you about one other quick thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Look in the acknowledgments in the blurbs.
Yeah.
The one written by Ann Tyler Harshbarger, who is a retired ballerina. Read what she said. It fits exactly what you just said. She says to women, and I have to be very honest, she's my niece.
Oh, and wow. She,
okay, I see it
voice,
here.
Voice message about it, and I wrote it down and asked her if I could use it.
Nice. She, so yeah, she says that her. You're courageous and brave, and she's in awe of the inspiration of it. I see it here. Perfect.
Yeah. And go to her website if you like yoga. She can do it long distance.
Nice. Okay. Well, thanks. Yeah, we advertised her as well. That's fantastic. So, I love a bit of yoga. And I love that you helped one person, and you've definitely helped more who you haven't received a voicemail, but you definitely have. So I encourage you and other writers to just talk about their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that would be my advice to people. Be honest. Be honest. Yeah. Say what you really, really feel.
Well, that's sure. great. Thanks.
So I always end every interview with the last question, which is, if there's one book that you wish you had been the person to write, what would it be?
Probably Jude the Obscure.
Oh, I love Thomas Hardy.
I love Thomas Hardy so much. I really, really love his writing.
Actually, funny enough,
I've not read a lot, but I've got a couple on my bookshelf. I just haven't got to them yet because I've always got a massive queue of books, but Thomas Hardy's in the queue.
Okay, good, because I always loved his writing.
That's great. And he talks about women as well, struggling and very realistic. So I kind of see that theme there. Great.
Far Thanks. From the Madding Crowd was a classic of that very subject.
Yes. Indeed,
yeah. Nice. Well, Ellen, thank you so much for calling into the show. It's been a pleasure having you. And thank you. I really enjoyed the book. So I'll keep an eye out for the sequel when we get it.
Okay. The question is, do you want some of the socks? I sent ladies the socks, but I didn't send guys the socks.
Whoa, what? We'll take socks.
Yeah, no, you know what? That's very funny because I always need socks. I always lose socks. So please do.
Look on the cover. I had someone make 100 of those socks. I will send you guys. You have to send me your mailing address.
I'll send the address. We'll get some socks. Thank you very much.
I'll make a photo. Please send me some too. I desperately need some. Okay. Really appreciate them.
Okay, awesome. Ellen, thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thanks. That was great.
Bye-bye.
I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah, that was lovely. Have a nice
day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, there we go. Ellen Nicholas calling in to chat about Remember Whose Little Girl You Are. Guys, check it out if you like a memoir.
I love honest memoirs. I think they're fascinating. Love to hear from people's lives. So that was very inspiring. Thanks for joining.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? I just want to mention, actually, I'm going tomorrow night to see Rachel Sage in Dublin, and we've played one of Rachel's songs on the show before, and I've been a fan of hers for almost 15 years, so almost half of my life. And she's from the States, and she's coming, she's in England at the moment. She's doing one show in Ireland, and I'm very excited to get to see her. I've been waiting a long time, and I've told her that I'm coming.
That's lovely. Okay.
I've been busy this month, actually. I've been doing some paddle boarding, I've been going to some Spanish classes in a pub. I've been watching some Mexican dance, and there's a big Mela festival in Belfast, and I'm going to try to join the Mexican dance group soon, hopefully. Because PJ, as you know, I just didn't have enough hobbies, man. You know, I just didn't have enough
Well,
things.
you're living the Christina Sea life. You're
Oh,
living
the
La Vida
Alexandra
Loca.
Sea life, yeah.
Alexandra, sorry, excuse me. Alexandra Sea life. Yes, you're living La Vida Loca there.
Living La
Good
Vida
Lord.
Lorca.
Oh, living La Vida Loca. Yes, I'm living
Literary time. So,
there.
guys, I read two more books, and I'll tell you why. First, I read part one of Don Quixote de la Mancha. Okay, Miguel de Cervantes. So for anyone that
Which we
doesn't,
reviewed in our second episode, I think.
well, yeah, episode two, you also
Wow,
read
podcast.
part one.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone that doesn't know or doesn't remember, the reason, normally I try to finish a book, right? But this is very long and very slow. And the reason I felt comfortable just doing one part is because they were released separately, 10 years apart, actually, 1605 and 1615. So,
Yeah.
look, if Cervantes can release them 10 years apart, I can review them 1 month apart. You know, that's what I'm telling myself.
Why not? I have to confess, Dean. I mean, we did an episode. I never finished Don Quixote, and well, because I just want to be honest here, I really did like it though, but I found it just a bit too long for me, and I just got distracted and started reading the next thing.
Yeah.
So I have to give it a try. So let's see how you find part two, and if you re-recommend it, I might try part two
Maybe,
again.
yeah.
What
It's another one
a
of
dying
these
thought.
slow plotting ones. Altogether, both parts are 450 pages, but again, they're quite full pages, And it's also in slightly older Spanish, so it's not quite as bad as maybe reading Shakespeare in English, which is like very different, but it is still a little bit older, a little bit different. So there's that to get used to as well. Plus, his friends Sancho sometimes gets things wrong, and then he's correcting his Spanish in old Spanish. So it's a little bit difficult for me to get around sometimes, but I did my best with it. I read part one. Secret. I've actually read about a third of part two already, and I'm actually preferring part two. So listen to that next time.
Right.
But part one is a bit more farcical than part two, I suppose. And it
Yeah.
originally it was split into four parts itself because it was there wasn't meant to
I
be a
do
part
think
two.
it's funny though. I do. I find it amusing, and I would like to get back to it. It is, by the way, I think considered. I think Salman Rushdie said it's his favorite novel, so
Okay.
that's another thing, author I like. I thought it was very funny. I just after a while, it is a bit difficult to read that old Spanish. It's very long as well. Little fun
Yeah.
fact, by the way, Lope de Vega, the playwright, at the same time was considered a big playwright in Spanish Renaissance
Sure.
Baroque period, was insanely jealous of Miguel Cervantes and made fun about him only having one arm, I think it is, or is it
Right.
one leg? I don't know.
Well,
And that's not fair.
I've been
That's
watching
different.
Ministerio del Tiempo, a Spanish TV show, where they go back in time, and there's an episode about that, and they both appear in it, and they're kind of rivals. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, like, but I think Don Quixote, to be honest, my impression is that all right, it was a bit difficult to read. Didn't finish it, but I did think it really original. I thought the concept, it's a picaresque novel, right? But it's really original. I mean, you can tell more about the plot if you like. But I thought it's just a very interesting idea that it's about a man who reads a lot, who reads
Yeah, and you're
too
right.
much.
You're right to say it's funny because it is funny.
It is. Yeah. But anyway, it reads too much. If you want to go ahead with
Yeah.
the plot.
So, I suppose this is why it's both trend-settingly original, but also not, because all of the picaresque novels now were influenced directly by Don Quixote, which I think is still the best-selling book in history. So you've got the likes of the Three Musketeers, even to an extent, the Pickwick Papers, Dickens, all these picaresque novels directly draw from Don Quixote, and so it's been massively influential.
And Flaubert's Madame Bovary about she basically likes to read a lot, and in this metaphor, because I think it's
Yes.
very enchanting, I suppose, and tempting for writers, this concept of every writer can understand the concept. Yeah, I've read a lot. I would like to live out this novel, and then they write their own version, like Pickwick Papers. Tom Jones, for example, is quite progressive, but Henry Fielding, and all draws. But even Salman Rushdie wrote a book, I think it's called Quixote. So, directly
Rushdie was attacked recently. Did you hear that in the news? Rushdie was attacked.
Yeah, really for all you literally students. Yeah, I'm afraid so. I'm glad he survived.
Yeah, keep on the news, guys.
But I mean, like being attacked for your work, I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's books in the end, you know.
Yeah. Jesus.
I mean, I love books. But now don't get.
There's also a sense in which it's not original because it was essentially, you know, he reads, so Don Quixote reads all these other books. And I suppose he sees all these kind of knights of old and he wants to be like one. So in that sense, this is drawing from that influence and is almost a pastiche of that kind of work, a caricature of that kind of work. So
it's really, ironically, it's kind of really kind of postmodern, even though talk about that, like for the later 20th century, but it's taking the literature from the time a bit earlier and then making, as you say, a pastiche and referring to that. And I do believe that most of them are actual novels. So if you're a scholar, you do read the original novels that are constantly mentioned. And then, but they're making a farce of it, and I find that very unusual for early 17th century literature to do that. Yeah,
and there's part where they even reference Miguel de Cervantes in the novel at the beginning, and then they find these books and things. So it's self-referential as well, which is very groundbreaking stuff, you know, for 1605.
That's why they often say it's the first modern novel, but some might even say it's the first postmodern novel. So it's a bit crazy having all that. At once, it's quite amazing.
Yeah, but look, I have some problems with part one, which I'll get to in a moment. But look, so basic plot summary. You know, it's a Don Quixote. He's reading all these books. He becomes so obsessed with them to the point where his friends have to burn down his library at one point. Guys, if you're listening, we're not that bad. Please do not burn down my books. But exactly. The Grand Library, where we record from, famously in our intro, is well protected, so you will not get into burn it. But, you know, he decides he's going to... And he's a very low-ranking, you know, knight. Hidalgo, I think it is. And basically, he decides he wants to become these grand knights of old, so he recruits this farmer, Sancho Panza, and they just go around, and he wants to, like, rescue a princess and do all this kind of, like, fancy stuff. And they go to this tavern, which he calls a castle, you know, and all his, most of the stories, he's the joke of it or the butt of it, or he gets beaten up or Panza, you know, gets beaten up or something. But it's a lot of him going around in this picaresque adventure from one thing to another, making a bit of a fool of himself. And he tries to help someone, but maybe makes the situation worse, actually, you know.
And I remember, I like that you're mentioning Don Quixote. It's nice that we're starting to talk about books that each other read, so we'll probably have more of this in the upcoming episodes. So if you want to go back to episode two, guys, to refer what I thought, but I basically think it's also a bit of a metaphor for either mental illness, so that he's schizophrenic because constantly he's imagining things, you know, and turning it into something adventurous, turning into Hollywood basically.
Yeah.
Or it's on the positive spectrum, it's telling us to dream big, so make the boring life he has a boring life, making it exciting. And what's wrong with that? Nothing really. And this has been done so many times in Hollywood, like that film with Ben Affleck. The Secret Life of the Curious Life of Walter Mitty, for example, where a man who has a boring life essentially just imagines having a fantastic life. And that was also an old Hollywood movie. It's been recycled so many times, this idea. And The Troop, this particular group of characters. One person who kind of is very imaginative and the other person is very naive, Sancho Panza, just goes along with the person kind of honoring him, usually he's shorter of stature. This has been done so many times in comedy and Shakespeare and Hollywood and in Seinfeld. We just mentioned Seinfeld. It's done there with Jerry Seinfeld and George Costanza. Basically, it's a Quixote and Sancho.
But I wondered if Sancho was completely forthright. You know, he is kind of honoring Don Quixote, and sometimes he'll get corrected by Don Quixote and everything, but maybe I'm wrong. But I thought there's a little undertone of him kind of knowing that this is a bit silly, you know. And there's maybe one or two times where he does speak against him and he's kind of like, you know, you sure about this? Like, you know, because Don Quixote, he wants to be, he essentially wants to be the Three Musketeers, you know. He just goes in and does whatever he wants and rescues people and goes into an inn and then leaves without paying because that's what the knight errants of old would do. And then Pans is left there to like pick up the mess, you know.
And it being one of your favorite novels, Three Musketeers, this is a really important reference point. This is this really influenced Alexandre Dumas there. Right, his picaresque novels.
It did. So. Don't get me wrong. Look, I still prefer Dumas. You know, I think he's divine perfection. But this is a fun book, and if anyone can, you know, this isn't meant in a bad way, but anyone who can be bothered to tackle it because it is a big undertaking. I think it's worth reading, and I think it's fun. But I have some problems with part one, which haven't recurred yet in part two. Which is that there's less adventure than I would like, actually. So some of the adventures, instead of him going like Pickwick to a new town or doing a new thing, some of them are just people telling him stories. You know, there's a lot of just listening to stories. And I find that a bit jarring and a little bit, it's difficult for me to care. Because it's that Anna Karenina method again. It's like, we're just going to insert 50 pages of someone else telling a story, and then we'll get back to the real story. And they said, well, what's the point? Why do I care about this, you know?
I don't mind that so much. I thought it was him basically kind of doing his own odyssey and just listening to people's stories and then somehow influencing him in a spiritual way. I thought it was kind of...
There's there a very are parallels. You know, he meets Cardenio, who's going a bit crazy and is obsessed with this one girl. Yeah. So there's parallels, you know, and we listen to Cardenio's story.
Indeed. Or damsels in distress, or basically damsels that are unapproachable, and he has that. I mean, he's basically being a knight because his damsel needs him, but like really the woman he talks about doesn't care about Don Quixote, and it's there's sad.
Dulcinea. Yeah, she doesn't care about him at all, or he's glorified her as this kind of princess that he's going out and doing all these quests for her, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of great.
From this book, we obviously get the word quixotic, you know, that's a word that we even use in English. And I've often been described as quixotic. So I like this, though. I'm reading this and I'm thinking, like, Don Quixote, like, what a good lad. Like, I want to be this guy, this romantic dreamer, this visionary, seeing the world in a better way. And just, and you could say... I know that there's the other way to look at it, like, is he mentally ill or what? But I was like, no, he's just having fun and he's trying to project a better world onto the boring world he's in. And I think that's the take that I got from it, you know?
Well, I haven't even finished the novel, so I'd like to get back to it and just finish part one and two. But I can already see that it's a masterpiece in the sense of it's really sort of, there's a very fine line between like, him being romantic and this being great, and like you can make dreams come true literally, even if it's not real, and you can just imagine, be playful, be a child. There's this Nietzschean element to it, or there's this element of is this a critique maybe of like being too much of a dreamer, you know? Like, I also prefer the first one, but I think it's good to kind of look at it both ways and seeing what are the pros and cons.
I empathize with him because, you know, I wrote a song once where Valerie the Pigeon Detective says, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" And then I sing, "I want to live in a Renoir painting," because I want to project myself into this beautiful, romantic, unrealistic world. So when I read this book, I feel like some empathy with Don Quixote, you know, and the fact that he doesn't really care about the consequences of his actions either. But some of the other stuff's boring. So one of the other stories is about Lothario, and again we still have that epithet today, you know, we refer to someone as Lothario, and that's a little side story about a guy who, again, Alex and I always say this in Shakespeare, please stop testing your partners. But this guy wants to test his partner and he doesn't trust her, so he gets his friend to seduce her, and the friend's really reluctant, but lo and behold, the friend ends up falling in love with her. Shock, horror, what other way could it possibly have gone? You know, you're asking for trouble if you tell your friend to go and seduce your wife, you know? I don't know why you would do that.
I'm telling you, and that's what Miguel Cervantes might be saying as well. And remember, everyone, that Miguel Cervantes, I think, is really more of a short story writer, which is very ironic because it's an extremely long novel.
But it's a novel of short stories. Like, that's the picaresque, isn't it?
But remember that he really started with novelas ejemplares. Remember, these meaning novelas in old Spanish just means the English word novela being a short novel or a very long story. So really he was writing between 1590 and 1612, 13. He's just been writing a lot of long or short stories. And I think Don Quixote is in some sense, it's maybe a collection of more short stories, but was the underlying theme that this person is traveling and experiencing more stories. A story lover is on an odyssey to collect more stories and even to co-create or engage in.
And I do want to read those. Okay. Actually, Mireia from some of our Patreon shows has recommended the Novelas Ejemplares. I think she might even have a copy for me. But I will say that I enjoyed this, but I just thought at times it's too long. Why are we getting these extra stories added in? Sometimes there's just poems, you know, and they'll just say, oh, someone told me a good poem. Here, I'll quote it to you in full length for 3 pages. And why?
But again, I find it interesting because it kind of foreshadows Grimm Brothers and certain folklorists who collect things. I think for me, Don Quixote is someone who's collecting, again, stories, songs, poems. Mm. Might be dry sometimes, but I find it interesting. In some sense, he's Miguel Cervantes himself, who I think worked more as a sailor, and that's how he lost his arm, yes. And so in a sense, it's kind of about him as well, and maybe him not wanting to be... Maybe Miguel Cervantes wanted to be Quixote-esque and not realistic. He just wanted to collect these stories.
Here's the difference between this and your other picaresque works, right? You've got Don Quixote, you've got Sancho Panza, and their long-suffering steed, Rocinante. You've also got a barber and a priest that go around with them. But it's not as if they get the gang together, like the Musketeers or like Pickwick. These other ones are kind of worried about Don Quixote, and they're like, this guy's going to be crazy, and we need to find a way to like get him back home and stop these adventures, you know?
But this is what I find interesting. This makes it probably more of a realist novel than anything else. This makes it more realist and romantic. Mm-hmm. So I find it interesting as well. It seems superficially a romantic novel. Actually, it's a hyper-realist novel. It's almost like, oh, don't do that. Come on, don't make him depict like a mentally disturbed person. But this is what society in Spain, at least at that time, would have done. So it's quite interesting.
It's a good one. I'm preferring part two because it's just less random asides and things like that. So we'll talk about that next month. I've only read about a third of it, but I'm feeling happy and I'm getting more used to the older Spanish and stuff as well. But I could have probably finished. I looked at my schedule for the month and I just didn't think I was going to finish all of part two before the end of the month. So rather than reading like half or three quarters, I read something else instead, you know?
Well, I gave myself 10 years between the two. So like, if you haven't read it next month, then please read it in the next 10 years. And
By episode 3000, I'm there. So I just thought, you know, why don't I read a little guilty pleasure? And in the end, the book I chose turned out to not really be a guilty pleasure. It turned out to be quite a good book. It's called Body Double, and it's by Tess Gerritsen. It's a Rizzoli and Isles thriller. Look, I'm only going to spend 5 minutes on this. It doesn't require a lot of discussion. But if you like your crime books, which, you know, we do, we're both like the Christie fans and things like that as well, it's a fun crime book. The reason it's called Body Double is because someone who works with the forensic team with the police, the pathologist or whatever, the medical examiner, someone gets killed in a car outside her house who looks exactly like her. And everyone thinks it's her and they think that she's dead. And it turns out that it's not her. It's essentially her twin. And she didn't know that she had a twin. So they do this investigation, like, what on earth's going on? And then it's body double because they find out she had a twin, and then she's actually adopted, so then they find out all this other stuff about her. Meanwhile, there is still a killer on the loose. They have to track down the killer, you know, who did this murder. Then there's little scenes set in the past. So the opening prologue features this girl getting tricked by a boy in her class to basically going into a pit where he wants to bury her alive, and he shows her like a cat skull from a cat that he'd previously done it to. And this is the start of the whole thing. And the more it unravels, we have like basically a family who spent their whole history killing people and selling babies, essentially. Like, and it's all this stuff, and it gets crazy. And then obviously Rizzoli is the cop who's trying to track it all down. But even though she's friends with Maura, they're not really a team. She's a cop. The other one's a forensic analyst. They don't share everything right away with each other. They're not like buddy-buddy. You know, they just are both doing different parts of the job. But this is why I really got interested in it. Page one. Charles Dickens often chooses names that match his character's traits. And I thought, okay, let's go.
That's good. You like that, eh?
So that nice, really got me. And then they go on and they talk about Nicholas Nickleby and everything, you know. So I love that. And that is a big Dickensian thing.
Nice.
This one's 450 pages, but I read it in 2 days. They're short pages. This is not Don Quixote. This is not La Regenta. This is a little page turner, mass market paperback, you know.
Oh, cool.
But there's some really good stuff. There's twists you don't see coming. There's this other cop, Roland, who knew a lot about a previous case that we think ties in. But then we think, was he really the good guy or was he not? And I'm not going to spoil it either way, but I wasn't sure because he's like too helpful. And he's really helping this one girl going beyond the bounds of what a policeman would do. And someone's stalking her. And I started to wonder, was he the one stalking her? And not necessarily, but there's just a lot of little seeds planted and a lot of little possible twists. And you don't know which twists are really going to happen and which ones you're just speculating on yourself, you know? And there's like a one husband of one girl that goes missing and he doesn't really care about her and he's mean to her and all this kind of stuff in front of people. He owns a car lot. But then, of course, once she's okay, then he goes on TV and talk. You know, he wants to essentially use as an advert for his car agency and all this kind of stuff. And there's like a crooked lawyer who's helping them sign off the adoption paperwork for the babies and stuff. And they find all this throughout the book. And I'm not really, I've probably said a little bit too much already, so I don't really want to say too much more or really any more. But for anyone that likes one of those, just... it's not a guilty pleasure because they tend to be worse written and more kind of silly romantic things. This was just good. Like, this was just a good page-turner crime book, and I really enjoyed it, and it gave me a little break in between the two parts of Don Quixote, and it actually reinvigorated me to go back and start part two, so.
Nice, cool. Well, to finish off, talking about the books that we recommend this summer, I really recommend one. Can I go first?
Go ahead.
So I'm really inspired by Ellen Nichols and just what she said there about Thomas Hardy. So I thought, well, why won't I just thought spontaneously now, I want to recommend Tess of the D'Urbervilles, A Pure Woman Faithfully Presented. That's a long title of Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Okay.
By Thomas Hardy, written between 1891 and 1892. Now, that's very interesting because the story is about a 16-year-old girl who basically, she gets raped. That's the beginning of the story, and that made it very controversial for Victorian England. But it is called A Pure Woman Faithfully Presented because the whole point of the novel is that she is, of course, still a pure woman. But this went against Victorian norms. They just couldn't accept it at the time. Now, this is for two reasons I recommend it. It's really feminist, I think, personally, and it got me into feminism. And if it's dry, if it might be a bit dry sometimes, the first and second part, the third part is insanely wild and really quite modern, I find. And also, this is the book that got me into what you can maybe call serious literature or just classic literature. This is the book that started it all. Before that, I was still reading, I would say, children's books, but then I just wanted to try a classic literature book. And I read Tess of the D'Urbervilles, and then I went on to Oscar Wilde and to Marx and Dickens. And, well, it led me basically to Books Boys. So this is an essential book for me and really moved me a lot. So Tess of the D'Urbervilles by Thomas Hardy. My dad, by the way, also loves this book. And, yes, and Ellen just recommended Jude the Obscure by Thomas Hardy. So Thomas Hardy.
Okay. I'm running out of recommendations. So I think at the end of our second season, after I've got a Halloween one that I've been waiting on, I'll try and come up with something for next month, and then I'm gonna stop doing recommendations. But last month I did some children's books. This month I've got an interesting one. You, I believe, were with me when I purchased this. It's a little book about Audrey Hepburn.
I remember. It was very amusing.
It says, but Ikoni Kina. Now, I just googled Ikoni Kina, and all I could find was this book, and then lots of stuff that I couldn't understand in Polish, or because we bought this in Poland, right?
You bought in Krakow. Now, hold on, is the book in Polish?
No, the book is in English.
Okay.
And look, it's difficult to call this a book because it's essentially a picture book of Audrey Hepburn with like a little paragraph here and there explaining some of the pictures and maybe sometimes there's a page of information which I'm just looking at is actually in Polish, but there's some pages in Polish, but the captions.
I don't think you haven't realized that.
You just enjoy seeing the pictures.
But the captions under the pictures, which some of them are a line and some of them are half page, you know, they're in English. So you do get to learn a little bit about her and about her movies. She's very pretty. Yeah, if you didn't know that, guys, hot take.
You're not really recommending a book here. You're just recommending Audrey Hepburn.
Well, yeah, what I'm really recommending is that Audrey Hepburn's the greatest human being who ever lived, apart from Socrates. So get on a t-shirt.
That's a couple that could meet in heaven, eh? Yeah, Socrates and Audrey Hepburn. You know.
So go watch her movies, but if you want to get this little book of pictures of hers, if you're ever in Poland and you find a picture book of Audrey Hepburn, buy it. That's essentially what I'm saying.
The most amusing, very amusing recommendation for you this month. All right.
And I think that's us. I think that's all we got. So guys, don't forget about our Patreon. Hit us up on Instagram. Booksboys.com is the website. Booksboys@hotmail.com if you want to talk to us. Be our friend and like us and like all the books. And that's great. Tell your friends about the show. That's the best way to spread the word.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
And we're going to end this month with our good friend Commander Alphabetta paying us a visit.
Oh, I see.
It's an old song of PJ's from a few years ago.
Of an old classic called Lockdown Classic, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be back next month. But for those of you on Patreon, we'll be back hopefully before then because we're going to, now that the summer's winding down, we'll try and get a bit more of a regular schedule. Playboy Alex is coming back. There's going to be some more Dark Place Dreamers with Robert. So we'll have some stuff on there as well.
In other words, the pot is starting to sizzle. So it's gonna be boiling soon. So get in the game.
That's
one
it.
Of the cool kids get it first, yeah.
Guys, when people are stressing you out, just tell them keep calm and read your Dickens. And if the DJ would spin that record, Commander Alphabetta, we'll be back in about a month.
See ya.
Commander Alphabetta was going through his troops one day. Most satisfied was he with troops A to K. Came he to troop L, he knew not what to think. Shouted he, all words with L, come forward and present yourself to me. Came forward the first, and tall man with clean shaven yet dull features, and never even duller eyes, wearing a bottomless coat, laceless shoes, and no belt around his waist. And he, my name was Lack. I've been searching for something, but I don't know why. Across 222 lands on a buffalo. We forgotten his name, the damn poor brute. I would shoot him if I could, but alas, I don't have every gun on me. Just said, Lack retreated, forward came a small fella with simple hands. Others was fewer beings too. We have been living minimalistically, eating rice, yet our plates go smaller inside every day. Although I don't complain. Oh no, don't complain. I never complain. Just said, less retreated, forward came, sticky, lucky chap. Slick
said he. I was born as Lake. I was born in poor circumstances, my lord. Both parents survived and I died young in the most violent British death. Well, I have learned from the teachings, or at least that's what I recall, that I've got to be ugly and false, but it's right to survive. But didn't I have all those characteristics? I would have not been able to escape slaughter and plague. Oh no, my name is Lick. Just said Lick retreated and forward came. An androgynous man with delicate features and long curly hair, with a voice so soft, he said, "My name is Love. My mother kissed me 44 times a day. My father held my hand 33 times. When I grew old, I searched for beauty. Oh, 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 1,001 Arabian Nights was part of things that I co-create to experience the beauty of the world. And in the end, nothing makes me happier than the flower that grows alone." Just said, Love retreated and entered a man. My name is, he said, Luck. Oh, oh, I'm not gonna stand here and lick your ass with your words galore. Gosh, each time I fall, I survive and never do I break a bone. I am the cousin of a monster. I will survive, I will survive.
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
the Society for Adding Dialogue to Books.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Marx from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission.
If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/booksboys, get the show early and all of our bonus Boof Fan the Boys shows. And you can also check out our music on Spotify or Apple Music.
Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends. And come back next time for another episode of books, boys. Read some books!
You know, your man, Durham, with the rabbit. What's my point? Why did I mention a book?
Wait, don't tell anybody you saw me with my glasses on, okay?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.